Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back! Welcome back to our interview series episode number 273, and we have Derek Sunderland, the head girls basketball coach at Tri-Center Neola, just across the Missouri River here, about, I'd say about 20 miles or so into Iowa. Coach Sunderland, his second tour of duty there at Tri-Center Neola, and I'm sure he's going to talk about that here in just a little bit. But before we bring in Coach Sunderland, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Check out their practice at Cosacchiro. That's CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, first thing you need to do is subscribe. Second thing you need to do is give us a great 5-star review. Third thing you need to do is to just say nice things. And then, oh yeah, by the way, maybe listen to a few podcasts as well, you know. But if you would do that, that helps us move up in the rankings, help people find a pen and a napkin podcast here and help coaches out. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough of that stuff here. Coach Sunderland, how are you doing here? Just back from the cheesehead state of Wisconsin. Took a little mini vacation in the school year here.
Yes, we did. You know, obviously, certainly first and foremost, I certainly appreciate you having me on, and you know, I certainly look forward to talking some basketball, talking some hoops here. But yeah, I just got back from Wisconsin, and you know, had an opportunity to kind of go up there and check out the Kohl Center, the facilities there at University of Wisconsin, as well as Marquette. And I know I'm a Vikings fan, but I'm like, of all places, I better at least check out Lambeau Field while I'm up there. So as painful as it is to admit I'm a Vikings fan, I'm like, I've heard a lot of great things about what Lambeau has to offer. So I thought, well, you know what, I'm up there, I better take advantage. And certainly didn't disappoint, even as a Vikings fan.
If you're a sports nerd, regardless of your fandom, there's certain places that you gotta go. I mean, you, like, if you get a chance to go to Fenway Park, you go to Fenway Park. If you get a chance to go to Lambeau, you go to Lambeau. If you got a chance to go check out the Rose Bowl, you go check. You know, I think that, I mean, that's what you do as a sports nerd, right, Derek?
Certainly, yeah. Certainly, as a sports enthusiast, you know, it's been on my bucket list, even, like I said, as a Vikings fan. But you know, like I said, I was very impressed, certainly didn't disappoint. And you know, I had an opportunity not just to take the tour, but also go through the museum there. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I spent 2.5 hours in there, and I felt like I could have spent 2.5 days. So yeah. Very, very impressive. And even if you're not a Packers fan or NFL fan, certainly worth your time.
Did you just go back to the hotel and take a long shower after that, kind of get that stench off of you as a Viking fan, having that Packer stench on you?
Yeah, it certainly didn't change my mind by any means, but you know, like I said, I think you really respect the time and effort and yep. and the tradition and the effort that those people put forth to put the that museum together. So
yep. Yeah. Well, great stuff, man. Great to have you on the podcast here this week. Looking forward to it. Let's just dive in here. Let's start this the way we usually start it, Derek. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your basketball journey, and, you know, how you've ended up back at Tri-Center Neola.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I guess, you know, like a lot of people that maybe aren't familiar with who I am, I actually grew up in North Dakota, and that just west of Grand Forks, which is also the home of the University of North Dakota. So grew up there, went to college at Valley City State, but just even as a youngster, loved the game of basketball, watched a lot of basketball growing up. You know, in that, and actually one of the teams that I grew up watching and supporting was the University of North Dakota. And I know before we even started the podcast, one of the things we were talking about is Coach Mac, Greg McDermott. He was actually an assistant for Rich Glass at that time as I was growing up. So, mm-hmm. You know, obviously the love of basketball, but I used to attend the UND camps when Coach Mac was an assistant up there. So actually known him and kind of been around him a long time, but attended Valley City State and played 2 years of college basketball And we were actually fortunate enough to have our kind of choose our student teaching opportunities. So my mom's side of the family is actually from Neola, Iowa here. So actually chose to do my student teaching down here, give me an opportunity to kind of see what else is out there as far as sports and basketball. And, you know, needless to say, I did my student teaching in 98 and I never moved back to North Dakota. So, you know, I certainly love it down here. Big sports enthusiast, and just seems like there's so many more better opportunities. I think the sports, you know, and the areas around us, that the sports that they have to offer are just that much greater than they are maybe in North Dakota. So I think that's a big part of maybe why I didn't go back north.
You've moved a lot, but not very far, Derek, over the years here. You know, you've I will come back to that. But yeah, let's dive into that. You know, you've been at Tri-Center and then Logan and Audubon and then back to Tri-Center. What's been kind of the good about moving around to various school districts? What's maybe some of the cons managing your career, so to speak, in that way?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously this, I think I just finished up my 24th year, you know, as a head basketball coach, but my actual first stop and first job was teaching fourth grade and coaching freshman girls basketball at Glenwood, which was interesting. Of course, you know, when you're young and naive, I think a little bit, and it's your first opportunity, you're not going to say no to anything. So, you know, I remember saying yes and signing the contract. And then of course, I remember them telling me, well, they hadn't won in seventh grade. They haven't won in eighth grade. So you only got one direction to go, but, you know, like I said, you're young at that time, you're willing to learn. You always, you know, it seemed like a great opportunity, you know, which it was. I mean, it forced me to work hard that first year, and certainly a rewarding experience. Then from there, I moved on to Tri-Center. I was a JV assistant coach under Brett Nanning for 1 year. And then I was fortunate enough to take over as head coach at Tri-Center. And I was there for 5 years. And then opportunity came up at Audubon, where I was there for 6 years. I actually followed, I believe, your last podcast, Coach Tony Viss.
Yeah.
I think he went to Harlan at that time, so I actually ended up taking the Audubon job. And then I was 11 years also at Logan Magnolia, which is just north here of Tri-Center, and then kind of back to Tri-Center here. So I know, like you mentioned earlier, different moves, you know, and different lengths of time, but we actually always lived in Neola. We never moved. It was just me as far as coaching opportunities that were out there. And, you know, with the movement that you kind of said and mentioned earlier, lots of pros and cons. So, you know, I guess I reflect and look back and, you know, always as a coach, there's always, you know, things that you can learn. There's always stops along the way that are certainly going to make you a better coach. And, you know, I think I look at some of the pros, you know, gave me an opportunity, I think, to work with different assistant coaches, you know, at each school. And it seemed like each coach at each school brought a unique, something unique, you know, and that was kind of something that there was their strength that I could kind of add to my coaching, you know, coaching plans and kind of how I wanted to go about it, my philosophy. But, you know, that was a neat thing, just having different philosophies, different coaches that could help me along the way, you know, and that. And, you know, I think, you know, it's, you look back at some of those stops, those, you know, you look at, you know, Tri-Center had some tradition before that. Audubon was a very big basketball community. You know, I go back and reflect a little bit there. I'm not sure there was a better gym to be at on a Friday night. They always packed that place.
The Wheelers.
And yep, absolutely. And the, you know, and the pride that community took in basketball, both girls and boys, and the support that they showed was phenomenal. But obviously, you know, when you make those moves, you know, there's all probably some cons that go with it. You know, I feel like you're trying to start a new program or trying to teach kids maybe a new philosophy and maybe what your expectations are. And, you know, that obviously doesn't happen overnight. You know, it takes a little bit of time, but I feel over the time as well, it can be pretty rewarding, you know, on that. So part of that con turns into a pro with just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. I accidentally skipped a question. Karen Self. Karen, please forgive me. I know you're busy with the Nike Hoop Summit right now, but Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. I'd be derelict of my duty here, Derek, if I didn't ask this question. When do you remember your first a pen and a napkin moment where you started scribbling stuff on a piece of paper and just kind of looking at the game from a different point of view?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. This, my actual pen and a napkin, and I know that's just a podcast we're doing, but my actual first experience that kind of stuck out, and it's kind of a set play that I had, and to be honest with you, actually drew it up with a pen and a napkin. I know most people are probably familiar with Coach Cohorn, but I was a young coach at Tri-Center at the time, and he invited me to go to the Final Four in St. Louis. And back then you could kind of hang out with the coaches a little bit at the hotel and kind of mingle a little bit. And you know, at that time it was a little bit more open visit, talk a little bit of basketball, talk hoops, you know, offense, defense, philosophy, stuff like that. And I'd finally, you know, I think at the time I might've been 23, 24 years old, but I finally built the courage up. I remember Coach Billy Donovan, he was at Florida, and he was sitting in a chair over there by himself, and I think just kind of looking at his phone. But at that time at Tri-Center, all we saw was 2-3 zone. And I just finally kind of built up the nerve and just said, hey, would you be opposed to, I said, I've got a little bit of size here. Always sees 2-3 zone. Would you be willing just to give me your favorite or your best go-to 2-3 zone set play? And he was kind enough, obviously, at that time. And, you know, I didn't have a pen or notebook or, you know, something that you would normally carry if you're going to a clinic. So there we were, you know, in a troop, in a napkin, and drawing up that 2-3 zone set play. And the crazy thing is we still use it to today, you know, practicing, putting it in different parts of the season. And, you know, it's just funny that we're doing this podcast, but that's exactly what that play was drawn up on.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your high school coach, Derek. Mark, is it Grop? Did I say that correctly?
Mark Graupe.
Graupe. I ask everybody kind of, you know, for the possibility of discussing some of their influences, and that was. I know you've been around the game a long time. You're a hoops junkie through and through. But that was the one guy you listed out of everybody that you could have. You know, that was the only name that you put down. So he must have had a really, really big influence on you. You know, why? What did he do for you for your career that he's still influential yet to this day?
You know, obviously, first and foremost, there's a reason that we keep in contact and that and still talk a little bit of hoops and stuff. But, you know, him and, you know, another guy, I guess I'd like to mention or certainly give credit to is Steve Halston, who was kind of our youth coach back where I grew up in Petersburg. And, you know, between the both of them, I know Steve Halston obviously gave me an opportunity starting in third and fourth grade with the skill development. The fundamentals taught me a lot of those things and, you know, got me interested in it. And obviously, you know, I fell in love with the game and, you know, and my high school coach obviously was, you know, was able to, kind of keep that going for me. And like I said, both just had a huge impact. I think just, took interest in me, you know, first and foremost, and then as well, you know, gave me the opportunity to teach me the skills and provide me with opportunities of things that, hey, I could be working on my own. And then as I got a little bit older and you know, a little bit more responsible, I know our high school coach, you know, he was willing, I could just knock on his door and he'd give me the key to the high school gym. And you know, I'd go in there and shoot whenever I could. You know, by using some of the things and the guidance that both of those gave me, you know, gave me an opportunity to, continue to improve and you know, love the game and put the time in.
Mm-hmm. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slicus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Coach, let's, you talked about your home growing up, the frozen tundra of North Dakota, which, you know, Western Nebraska winters have to seem like they're nothing compared to 5 or 6 hours north of here, right?
Absolutely. You know, I actually remember my first time down here, and, one of the first times they called off school, and, you know, I think we got 2-3 inches of snow, or, you know, just a couple inches of snow at 1 o'clock, and everybody's talking about getting out of school and I'm like, what are we getting out for? And they're like, oh, we got quite a bit of snow, and there's snow coming. And I'm like, holy smokes, guys, you guys have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, what a snowstorm is and what cold is. And,
yeah,
you know, cause I, you know, and I, of course I just grew up used to, you might get 8 to 10 inches of snow and it might be 2 degrees.
Yeah.
And you get up and, you know, down here, they'd be talking about we're out for 2-3 days, and we'd get up and we'd go on time and everybody was there.
Yeah.
You know, just that's, and it just goes back to the expectation, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
But I also look to a little bit though is, you know, how society's changed, but up there too, it's pretty flat. So there's no, obviously we deal with the wind, but
not a lot of wind breaks.
You're not going up and down hills like you are here. And, you know, and that, and obviously that plays a factor. And, you know, and as a parent now, certainly, you know, you're like, oh, do you want kids on the, your kids on the bus and, and that, so.
Yeah. But, well, you're,
you know,
oh, sorry. Well, from your home state of North Dakota to your adopted home state of Iowa here, you know, you've spent your professional career coaching in the state of Iowa. And I think, one of the things that as a native Iowan as well, and witnessing it as a kid growing up, seeing the passion that the state of Iowa has for girls basketball. And a lot of that starts with the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union, which has been around since the 1950s and, you know, has been in so many ways, really, really progressive in its thought process. Just, you know, starting off, just giving young women an opportunity to compete. And, you know, obviously we had the 6-on-6 game that graduated to the 5-on-5 game. But I know that there's a lot of people who are in the game that are in the know, and they understand the machinations of the bureaucracy of athletic unions and different things like that, that are pretty jealous of the high school girls coaches, the coaches of high school girls teams in the state of Iowa because of the way that the union runs. And you're a part of that. You've been part of basketball advisory committees and other things like that. But, you know, talk a little bit about how, you know, it's just nice to know that the union is going, they're not thinking, you know, right in front of their nose. They're thinking an arm's length into the distance here. And what can we really do to enhance the experience of all of our female athletes?
Yeah. You know, I think first and foremost, the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union, you know, and I think we refer to the state basketball tournament, but I don't think, you know, we can give them enough credit. I don't think we can give them enough compliments, pat on the back for what they're doing for the girls' state basketball tournament. And I guess, the second first thing before I dig in here a little bit further is if there's another girls' union from another state, if you want to see how to recognize female student athletes and put them up on a pedestal, come on down to the Iowa Girls State Basketball Tournament. I'm not sure, and I put them up against pretty much anybody else in the U.S., and let's compare, because I tell you what, the Iowa Girls State Basketball Tournament and what they do for those female student athletes is just phenomenal. Like I said, I don't think they get enough credit, and I've been fortunate enough to take a team to the Vets Auditorium, take a team to the Wells Fargo, and every single year it seems like they are looking to improve it and putting forth the effort to improve it. And not just them, but I think they're also asking people, hey, what can we do? What did you like? What could we add to make it even better? Mm-hmm. And you don't do that unless you care about those female student athletes in Iowa. And I've had the opportunity to, I'm on the Iowa Girls Coach Association, the Iowa Basketball Coach Association, on the basketball advisory right now. And like I said, been fortunate enough to have some teams down there. And I know that gets talked about a lot, you know, just how great and awesome a job that they do and the time and the effort that they put in. And I think the neat thing about the Iowa Girls Union, it's not just this year's kids that maybe made the state. If you go back and you walk the hallways of Wells Fargo Arena, you're going to see the past, you know, whether it's Miss Basketball, whether it's the 6-on-6, you know, and that it's not just the present time, you know, they're trying to really go back and recognize, the student athletes back then, and then also progress into the 5-on-5. Like I said, it's, you know, doing a podcast probably doesn't do it justice for what they're really doing unless you get down there at Wells Fargo and kind of get behind the scenes and that. And like I said, being on the IGCA, IBCA, even in those, those different programs that I'm involved in, we still talk about the girls' state tournament. We talk a little bit about the comparison of how well the girls' union and what they do for the girls compared to maybe what's going on at boys' state basketball. It's just phenomenal how much further I think the girls' union is in promoting the sport, but more importantly, promoting the student athletes that are putting the time and effort in on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. What's been now that the dust has kind of settled a little bit, Derek, what's been the reaction in the state with the boys deciding in a couple years here to take their state tournament up to Hilton Coliseum up at Iowa State University? You know, splitting. I don't ever remember the boys and girls having separate sites for the state tournament, whether it's Vets or the Well. And now the boys are going in a different direction. What's kind of been now that, like I said, as the dust has settled, what's kind of been the reaction?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be real frank and honest with you. I'll probably know a little bit more after the 23rd of April, we have our basketball advisory meeting, but I think obviously the girls' union, I think they're going to keep it at Wells Fargo, which I know is maybe changing over to Casey's, with changing their name and stuff. But
they got to keep selling that breakfast pizza to afford that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. they know what they're doing down there. They're just a step ahead of us.
Hey, yeah. And a lot of people will say a lot of things about Iowa, and this may not make sense to anybody outside the state, but I'm telling you right now, if you want to have great pizza, you can come to Iowa and you can have the Pizza Ranch, or you can have Casey's Pizza, and you are going to walk away a very satisfied person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't go wrong in either one of those. And like I said, it's, you know, people want to order pizza. All you got to do is stop at Casey's.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anyway, go on with the meeting here on the 23rd.
You know, got a meeting on the 23rd, basketball advisory, and obviously, you know, we talk about numbers and participation, and, you know, they're the girls' union. It's not just something that they do. I mean, they're phenomenal about, I think, reaching out, looking for ideas, and, you know, hopefully taking a little bit of input on what coaches, you know, and players saw or liked or didn't like. And they're always trying to improve upon it. And you know, like I said, I think Wells Fargo, it's a reward for kids to play in an arena like that. And especially, I guess I speak a little bit for small schools. It seems like those kids in the small schools, and you make it a state tournament, and you get to play in a Wells Fargo arena. And it's a special opportunity. It's a memory that those kids will never forget. And I think keeping it there and having all the games there is a great opportunity for those young ladies. Like I said, you know, kudos to the girls' union and what they do and making that experience that the kids will never forget and they'll always have for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your team a little bit, Derek. Let's talk about your program. A little bit disappointing season wins and losses wise last year, 7-15. And one of the things that I during my research here kind of saw is you want to score the ball a little bit better than you did last year. You know, what are some things that you're looking at with your own program here to, you know, put that ball in the basket a little bit more than you did last year?
Yeah, you know, you go back, you look at our season, you know, I think we ended up 7-15 last season. We averaged 35 points a game, which is, you know, right now we just didn't have, my third year back, we just didn't have the numbers as far as, you know, I think the kids that understanding the time that we have to put in, you know, the amount of time shooting, the amount of time of just doing the skill development that goes with it if you want to be able to score in the regular season. You know, I think, and part of that too is we're looking a little bit at personnel. You know, we didn't have obviously a ton of scoring and averaging 35 points a little bit had to do with what we were doing on offense as well, with, you know, slowing the game down and maybe limiting the possessions of our opponent too.
Sorry, go ahead. Keep going, man.
I just think that, you know, we have kids that'll put some time in and, you know, in the off season and, you know, continue to get better. And, you know, one of the things that we tell our kids is, I think kids always want to know, all right, well, what's my role going to be next year? Excuse me. You know, understanding your role, and that kids need to understand you choose your role maybe in the off season going into the next season based on the time and the commitment that you make.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? You know, you're choosing your role. You come and ask me what's your role going to be next year? I want to shoot more. I want to score more. And 9 out of 10 kids, like, that's their goal. Hey, I want to be able to score more, which is fine. But you know what? I try to kind of put it back on the kids and say, well, I don't know what your role is going to be. That's up to you. You know, that's going to be your choice based on the time and the commitment that you put in the summer, you know, will dictate what your role is going to do, you know, and what your role is going to be, which, you know, I think gives the kids a little bit different perspective, like, oh, geez, I better put the time in, you know, and you can always fall back on that during the season as well.
Yeah. What about you, Derek? One of my questions that I'm asking everybody here this spring until probably around Memorial Day is what's your improvement season plan? What are you looking to get better at as the head coach of the Trojans of Tri-Center Neola?
Well, we're certainly, we got to, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, do a lot of skill development and we're going to be a little bit younger team. We kind of got that gap. We got a few older kids that are going to have some experience, and then we've got some younger kids, our eighth graders, coming in that have been around the game a little bit more, but it's still a big jump, I feel like, going from eighth grade into high school and on that. But I think just kids understand, hey, we got to put in the time. We've got to, be able to shoot shots. You know, we talk to kids all the time about shooting shots at game speed, and that's something we're going to do a lot of this summer as well. I think just being able to get a lot of shots up, and like I said, I've never told a kid that, told them they couldn't shoot, but they got to understand what's a good shot for them and where on that court we want them to take that shot. So, we'll do a lot of back to the little fundamentals, the skill development, the shooting. One of the things we talk about too, we'll work on passing as well. We talk about a good shot starts with a good pass and that falls back of being a good teammate. Can I get somebody a good pass so they can get a good shot off? So we're going to go back to, like I said, a lot of fundamentals. But also with that said, do some scrimmages, maybe get in the league on Wednesdays just to be able to get up and down a little bit and use some of those skills that we're working on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound?
Absolutely. Huge fan of John Wooden.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Like I said, a huge fan. Read a few books, I guess. One of the things, and this kind of falls under my philosophy. I know we talked a little bit about, what's that quote of the day and I guess the one quote that probably sticks with me the most, and that is, the little things done well is the greatest secret to success. We're always talking to our kids, I feel like, at practices, at shoot arounds, just do the little things. And, that'll take care of the big things, and just do the little things, squaring up, get 10 fingers to the sky, see orange, we take a lot of pride in just being able to be good, fundamentally sound basketball team. And that starts with the little things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a little wooden on tap here. We've got a little wooden literature from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. I got a quote here for you, Derek. I'm going to read it to you. I'll give you a second to chomp on it a little bit and tell me what you think. How does that sound? All right. So from page 58 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here is the John Wooden quote of the day. The only pressure that amounts to a hill of beans is the pressure you put on yourself. If you're trying to live up to expectations put on you by the media, parents, fans, your employer, or whatever else there may be, it's going to affect you adversely because it brings on worry and anxiety.
I would agree 100% with that. You know, and I think too, as you know, I you know, you look in the mirror and I guess I reflect on myself and go back. And I think maybe at a young, you know, each, I do break it up, I guess, maybe in segments of 5 years, 10 years. But, you know, I think when you're a younger coach, you know, you are worried about maybe what parents think or say. You're worried about everybody getting the right amount of playing time. You're worried about how do I please everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, obviously going into that, 24 season now coming up on my 25th season is one, I put all the pressure on myself, you know, hey, I set the bar, I set the expectations of, hey, what do I need to do? You know, I don't want pressure necessarily on the basketball kids. But I think it's always reflecting back on yourself. Hey, what do I need to do to be a better coach? What do I need to do to get kids playing in the right position? What do I need to do to make sure I am, you know, communicating to parents to make sure they understand as well, hey, we're in it together to make this the best experience for your daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not me against you. It's not me against the kid. You know, what are we doing together to make it the best experience? They're going to get 4 years. Let's make it a memorable 4 years.
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, two things about those thoughts, Derek, when you're talking about those relationships that you have with your parents, or whatever it may be, I think sometimes parents see it as an antagonistic relationship, whereas as coaches, we are seeing it as we want this to work. You know, we need this to work. Now, I'm in charge. So, you know, the I'm the captain of the ship here, so to speak. But it's not that I'm not unwilling to listen to suggestions, but you've got to understand that, you know, I just can't do whatever you want me to do whenever you want me to do it just because it would benefit your child. And then the other thing is you talked about looking at yourself in the mirror. I don't think if the average parent knew how much pressure each coach put on themselves to win, to give their kids a great experience, to play every kid as much as they possibly wish that they could, and all of those various things along the way, I think they would be absolutely stunned to know how much that eats at us off the floor.
Yes, you know, absolutely. And I think there's always that perception, I think, maybe from a parent standpoint, we make decisions and choices based on what we think is best for the team. But that coming from a parent, you know, that reflection is, oh, you did that because it was my daughter. You know, it's hard sometimes to convince them that, no, I'm making a decision that is best for the team based on what I'm seeing and evaluating on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, as coaches, it's hard for us, I think, at times to be honest with our players, you know, but at the same time, okay, as a parent myself now, you know, how do we tell our kids the truth, you know, but yet still make it, hey, this is a learning experience. You know, there's obviously times coaches, parents, we have to tell our players, our kids, things that they don't want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, but I tell you what, I like that quote, and, you know, this might be off the beaten path a little bit here.
Never happens on a Pen and a Napkin podcast. Never happens.
Love it. But I think the other thing that that quote also triggers is our younger generation coaches, and how do we keep that younger generation into coaching.
Yeah.
You know, because I go back and I look, all right, this is going to be coming up my 25th year. And I look, geez, in 5-10 year segments, holy smokes, it's really changed. You know, and I'm not, you know, trying to be cocky or arrogant, but you just don't see many coaches that have been in it 25 years, 30 years, 40 years anymore. You know, and that's getting to be less and less, it seems like, every year. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, that's one of the things as a young coach, how do you understand you put that pressure on yourself? How do you build the connections with parents? How do you build your philosophy? But how do you stay in it when there are negative situations that you have to deal with, or there's the parents that you have to deal with, or there's the pressure of maybe administration? Mm-hmm. That you have to deal with, but I think that quote is great because I think it triggers numerous aspects of a basketball program from a coach's point to parents, to the player, and that as well. But I think that's an interesting thing is how do we, you know, I look at it, all right, a minute, you know, going in my 25th year, what can I be doing as a coach to help these coaches that have been in it 2-3 years and something doesn't go well, or they have a bad experience? How do we help guide them? How do we serve as mentors to try and help them and keep them in it?
Yeah. Yeah. And well, I know that, you know, they're working towards that. I love the program that like Kylie Yates and Jeff Schertz and those guys have with the mentoring program. And again, you know, Iowa being forward thinking, you know, I'm sure you guys are dealing with it at Tri-Center. There's a teacher shortage, if there's a teacher shortage, then more likely there's going to be a coaching shortage, you know, and, you know, you've got to be able to talk people out of jumping off the proverbial bridge when things get tough, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, if you have somebody who is seasoned and experienced that can say, hey, Billy or Mary, this will pass. I've been here a million times. This is when they're saying this, they really mean this, you know, and on down the line. But if you don't have that as a young coach, if you don't have that mentor, if you don't have that network, your mind can go to a dark place very, very quickly. And then you go, I don't want to put up with this, you know? And I think that's when we deal with those situations, what I don't think, you know, the people who do that, I don't think they understand the ripple effect that they are creating, where they are driving more and more people, good people with good intentions and want to be transformational coaches. They're driving them away. And, you know, part of what I'm trying to do here is to help folks navigate those tough times. And here's some words of advice. Here's where we've been. And having conversations like this, I hope it helps them out.
Yes. You know, like I said, I think just the, you know, how do you, like you hit the nail on the head, how do we talk to these young coaches and say, when adversity hits and the different types of adversity, how do we handle those situations, you know, and keeping things in perspective. My expectation of the player might be different than what the parents' expectation is, you know, and that. But I think always going back to, we are, nothing's personal. We're going to do and make choices and decisions that are best for the team.
Yep. Well, one of the things that I know is important to you, Derek, is building culture. Again, kind of deep diving and kind of going through your, especially like your Twitter stuff or X or whatever we're going to call it today. You know, one of the things that I really noticed that is a big theme for you is being coachable. And, you know, you talked about in the sheet that you gave me, you know, your pillars, you know, good effort, good attitude, be coachable, be a good teammate. But for me, it just kind of really, that's one of the big themes that it felt like I kept coming back to as I was getting ready for today was, you really, you know, that of those four things, those are all four really important things. But to me, it seems like be coachable seems to be, if you had to rank them 1 through 4, that might be at the top of the list here. Am I right? Am I wrong? Am I reading in between the lines too much?
No, I think you're absolutely correct. You know, I think there's probably certain days we might put more emphasis on one than the other, but, you know, I guess I'm a big person on culture. At every stop I've made, I've always tried to provide our student athletes what I think is hopefully going to be the best culture and a positive culture. Doesn't mean you win less, doesn't mean you're losing, but win or loss record has nothing to necessarily do with your culture. You know, it can still be a good experience. You know, one of our goals, you know, within our culture of where I've been at the different stops is, can you walk away and say that I had a good experience? So these are kind of the four, like you said, pillars that we kind of live by. You know, we talk about good effort, good attitude, be coachable, and be a good teammate. Can you bring? And we try to keep it somewhat basic, but I also feel like with those four pillars, it does cover a lot of things, not just on the basketball court, on the floor, but also off the floor. And we do relate to both. But we talk to our kids, these are the four things that we need you to bring every single day, or we're going to challenge you to bring them every single day. Now, can every kid bring all four of those 100% every single day? Probably not.
Yeah.
But from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, you know, and I ask these kids, do you feel like you improved on all four of these things? You know, and I'm hoping culture-wise, they should be able to say yes, you know, and you're hoping they say yes. But, you know, like I said, good effort, good attitude, be coachable, be a good teammate. We live by these things on a daily basis. And the kids are completely aware of these expectations. You know, I might not care if you know, drop a basketball or we turn it over, but what I care about, how do you react to it? You know? And we talk about, if you bring these four things throughout your career, you know, in the basketball program, I would think that you could hopefully walk away and say, hey, you know what? It was a good experience, you know, and that, but we also talk to these kids about life skills. And I try to, you know, I said, I know I'm your basketball coach, but nobody here, I've yet to have a kid that's going to go on and make millions. Nobody here had any NIL money. And don't get me wrong, I've had some good basketball, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be around some good ones, but nobody here is making a living playing basketball.
Yeah.
But what can I do as a basketball coach to help you be successful later on in life? And, you know, can you bring your best effort to work every day? Can you bring a good attitude with coworkers that maybe aren't your best friends or maybe don't agree with what, you know, what you want to do? When your boss comes and tells you, hey, I need this, this, and this done today, can you be coachable? Can you look them in the eye? Can you nod your head and say, yep, you know? And then are you a good coworker? Meaning, can you be a good teammate? Mm-hmm. You know, when your coworkers maybe irritate you some days or don't do what they're supposed to do, how do you work with your coworkers as you get older? So, like I said, we tie it into basketball, but also we're trying to teach kids some life skills. And we tell them too, same thing. You can have a successful basketball season. It has nothing to do with stats, but it has to do with four things that you can control. Mm-hmm. And that's in your control. And same thing when you get a job someday, you know, these are four things. Remember, you can always control, you know, it's funny because I've had some kids come back to me already and we'll be watching a game or I'll be visiting with them and they'll come back to this like, oh, that isn't a good attitude. I remember talking about that, you know, so obviously, you know, I'm fortunate it's sticking a little bit with the kids and they're recognizing it. And now after they've graduated and come back and watch, they're like, oh, you know, there's those four things we talked about and, you know, and that. So, like I said, I take a lot of pride in our culture. I want it to be a positive experience for the kids. I want them to reflect back. Nobody's going to remember wins and losses. Nobody's going to remember how many points you had on February 8th, you know, 2024, but they're going to remember, you know, what were you like as a teammate? What was your effort? Were you good attitude? You know, were you coachable when people asked you to do things that, you know, maybe you didn't want to do or took you out of your comfort zone as well? So, like I said, those are just kind of the four things that we've lived by in the different stops that I've had. And I think it's hopefully had a positive impact for our players on and off the court. And then as well as they move on, whether they play at the college level or get a job or, you know, help them get through their days of college. Mm-hmm.
coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Well, Coach, one of the things that you use to help build that is the use of player binders. And as a unabashed Don Meyer disciple, I was huge into binders and note-taking and different things like that. And I'm really, really curious to kind of pick your brain on this and what's in the Tri-Center Neola coaches or players binder that you got lined up and how you use them to help build your program.
Yeah, so this is, you know, something I've been doing, obviously, for several years here. I've actually, as a head coach too, I have my own binder, but of course that one's probably about 3-4 inches thick and has every practice and stuff like that. But what I do with the kids is I usually get them usually 1.5-inch binder, put their, Tri-Center girls basketball on the cover page, their name on it, take a little bit of ownership in that. And in those binders, we give them kind of the beginning of the season, kind of a packet that has maybe their goals that they have offensively, defensively, attitude wise. And then along with kind of a questionnaire that I've used as well in kind of individual meetings, hey, what'd you do in the off season? What position do you feel like you're best suited for? What position would you like to play the best? And how important is basketball to you? Are you coachable?
Yeah.
And different things like that. And, we just kind of go through that. We also put in there the playbook that we have for our basketball kids and that. So they always have that to kind of refer back to, whether it's film or we put in a new play throughout the season. We always put that in there. It's in there so they can go back and take a look at it. And then in the back, what I do is, I know, Marty, like we've all been to a ton of clinics, but I have diagrams, quarter court, half court, full court on the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side, we've got lines. So some of the things that we've done in the past, so let's say we go to the IGCA scrimmages in Atlantic on a Saturday, we might play 3 games, and I always tell the kids, I said, all right, heads up. I'm going to ask you 2 things you did well, 2 things that, hey, I got to get better at. So we're taking notes in that. I'm trying to, very old school, but I'm trying to catch up with the kids a little bit. Hey, if you see a play, on TV, or you see a play wherever it might be nowadays with technology, because like I said, I'm so old school and so far behind, but you see something on TikTok that, hey, hey, this play might work, or hey, did you see this? I guess I'm just trying to get the kids, one, to watch the game a little bit more and take some interest in it. And we've had a few kids that have brought some stuff back, like, hey, yeah, let's run this. I like this. And there's been a couple times where they've brought a play back, said, hey, I really like this, but let's just switch personnel here a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'll even ask them, where do you think so-and-so should be? And so sometimes I get some kids with plays on there and that, and a little bit with our binders too. You know, if I tell kids, if you're out and about and you see a quote that's pretty cool, bring it back, share it with us. And I guess my biggest thing is I'm just trying to strike more interest in the game of basketball, especially on the female side of, you know, I don't feel like kids watch enough basketball, or, you know, or if they hardly do. And there's a lot to be learned by just watching the game and exposure to the different things that are out there. So we kind of use our binder there. They've got the practice schedule all the way through November, December, January, February, the departure schedule. So like I said, I think through that, it has kind of provided them to take some ownership, to hopefully take some interest, maybe get an idea mentally, the seriousness that it's going to take to play in our program. Because the expectation, they're expected to bring it to film. They're expected to bring it to practices every day.
Make it part of their person. Also, yeah.
Correct. Yep. Yep. I mean, it's everywhere they go. And then shoot arounds too. They're expected to bring it. That's their ticket to shoot around. Mm. You know, so you've got to have your ticket if you're going to play.
Yeah.
So it, you know, and it kind of goes back, and obviously we talk a little bit about, you're going to have to give a presentation someday. You know, you better have your presentation. You better be able to take some responsibility, and you know, and that. So it teaches, I guess, a few other aspects of life too as well, not just the basketball part of it. But we've had a lot of success. I think the kids enjoy it. I think they like it. I'm not sure they like dragging it around every day, but it's interesting. I mean, the kids, you know, especially after you have them a year, they don't say, you know, hardly anything about it. And you know, usually in the fall, they're every year they're asking, are we getting the binders, are we getting the binders? So I think the kids actually enjoy them. They like them. I know, like I said, it comes with a little bit more responsibility and that, but I think it's good for kids to understand there are expectations and there's a seriousness approach that, you know, we're going to take if we want to be good.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, another thing that I always liked about having binders was, you know, kind of, you'd mentioned ownership. You've got to take the notes. I'm not going to just give this to you, or, you know, those type of things. Like if you want to prepare yourself, you've got to have a little skin in the game. And so you've got to take the notes when we have discussions or whatever it may be. You know, that's another thing that I use the binders for as well. And I think that's good. Like if you're not prepared for the scout, well, we went through it all. You were supposed to write down the pertinent information. If you didn't know, that's on you. You were in the meeting. You were supposed to take care of it. And that puts, again, kind of that accountability, skin in the game part of it with them as well.
Yep. You know, and I really like that as well. And I guess one of the things, too, I maybe forgot to mention earlier, we usually have about a 4-page scouting report, you know, personnel, their offense, their defense, out of bounds plays, their slobs, blobs, you know, and that, and we put that in there, you know, as well. And I've got their name on the top and you know, they put that in there. And then as we watch film and we go over things in film session, everybody gets a pen as well that's kept in their binder and they're taking notes, you know, on that. And, you know, cause I'll come back and quiz them, you know, we maybe prep Monday, Tuesday, we shoot around film and say, all right, who's averaging what? Hey, what's their strengths? We got a four square. And, you know, the kids have those binders. They've looked at it, you know, and that. And I said, I'm not asking you to spend hours, but I said, I am expecting you, you know, to know the scout and to know what the game plan is going in, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little shooting, Derek. Let's talk some of your favorite shooting drills. And I know, I mean, obviously we're on a audio medium here. So, but what's two or three of your favorite shooting drills, some of the stuff that you're going to be doing with your kids this spring and summer to hopefully put the ball in the basket a little bit more for the Trojans?
Yeah. Like I said, I do a lot of breakdown, shooting guards on one end, posts on the other. And, you know, obviously we talk a lot about, footwork and, you know, and that, from the guard standpoint, being able to catch the ball, ready to go, ready to attack. You know, our shooting drills off, obviously I talk a lot about how do you try and score at all three levels? You know, go back a little bit, self-scouting, but we do a lot of ours, you know, we call it our Louisville shooting drill, I guess, for our guards, about, you know, being able to catch, ready to shoot the 3-point line, being able to low rip and put your shoulders below the defender's hips to be able to blow by, and can you finish at the rim? Can you hit the pull up jumper? You know, and we talk a little bit about, you know, what's your counter? You know, teams are going to scout you. You know, I had a chance to listen to Coach Viss and your guys' podcast, and, you know, with Huddle out there, it's everybody has you scouted. They're going to, you know, they got the percentages of how well you shoot going left, how well you shoot going right, how well do you shoot off of one or two bounces? You know, how well are you at the rim? Everything's out there. So we're just, you know, we break down guard shooting on one end, post shooting. Our post shooting is probably turned more into, there's not a ton of stuff with our block to the back, just the way basketball's going. Everything's kind of faced up. You're four, even you're five now with five out. But ours are a lot of where we think those kids are going to get shots within our offense. And we just rep the crap out of, hey, footwork, catching the ball. We also go back to, if you know, those four things in our culture. We talk about being a good teammate. If you make a bad pass, you know what? I might call you out. Hey, that's one of our pillars. Be a good teammate. A good teammate is going to give you a good pass. Mm-hmm. You know, so we kind of rep that. And the crazy thing is, probably our two favorite shooting drills, we do a shoot 100 at the very end of practice. We start at the very beginning of the year, I put 5 minutes up, and our goal is to get to shoot 100. Well, eventually, as you get a little bit better, you might, all right, next time we're at 448, or we're at 450. All right, hey, we got a little bit better, now we're at 446. And we write that down, and then we're trying to, you know,
beat that
get
number.
To 100 and see, yep, beat that number, see how you know, how much we can improve throughout the season. And then it's funny too, I got this drill called Wartburg drill. I actually stole it from Viss when he was at Audubon, and we still use it today even in practice, but has a lot to do with just how we want to attack. We do have posts that are playing to the back of the basket. You know, it's just four different steps. We throw it in the post. It might be drop step on one side, up and under on the other. Then we work on kicking out and guards relocate. And then the third step, we relocate, kick to the guard. All right, I want a shot fake, drive it to the mid range, and then read the defense. You either got pull up jumper or you're kicking with your post players facing away. And then the last one, we try to double at the block, and then we got to kick out opposite sides. So, you know, those are probably our two favorite shooting drills. But I feel like within those shooting drills, especially Wartburg drill, we're just working on a lot of those little things, the skill development, the fundamental part, you know, and it kind of goes back to my quote on John Wooden, you know, little things done well is the greatest secret to success. Can you make a good pass? Can you make a good ball fake? You know, I think some, especially passing, I just feel like, too, I know, even though I know we're talking about shooting, but passing might be the one skill that I just feel like kids are not as good at anymore. And if you can't make a good pass to lead to a good shot,
yeah,
you know, your team is going to struggle scoring.
Yeah. Well, I read a book on analytics a few years ago, and at the NBA level, you know, for every three touches that a player has, they pass it twice, you know, or little over two times, you know, about 69 or 70% of the time that they have the ball, 7 out of 10 times they have the ball. They're not shooting it. They're not dribbling. They're not getting fouled. They're not doing they're passing it. But we don't spend as much time as we probably should on the skill of passing. And that is something that, especially the last few years when I was coaching, we really, really concentrated on, all right, passers, hit your partners on time, on target. Receivers, receive the ball well. Get your hands up and be ready to catch. And the first thing you should be thinking on the catch is shoot, because that's probably the most open you're going to be. So be thinking shot there right away. And that's something that, you know, we really, really emphasize day in and day out. I think we got better at it.
Yes, you know, like I said, it's, you know, it's kind of, I've told the kids numerous times in practice, this is the lost art. This is why we work on this drill, you know, and you in a game is like, how many times have you gone back? It's like, gosh, that was a good shot for us, but we couldn't even get the shot off. We should have got a shot off, and that was, it would have been a great look for us, but instead we're having to go down to our ankles and catch the basketball, or it's high and it took me further away. Well, now by the time I catch, square up and try to get the shot off, I can't even get the shot off, you know, or it gets blocked, or, you know, so just it's kind of become a lost art, but something that we constantly work on. But I think also trying to simulate that at game speed is so important as well.
Yep. Great stuff, Coach Sonderlund. Really, really good stuff here today. Coach, if folks want to know more about your program or know more about you, how can they find out?
Well, at Coach Sondy4 on Twitter, or on X, I guess now. And, you know, that's probably the best thing. I'm guilty. I'm probably not as, as efficient or as good as maybe tweeting out as much things as I probably should. I probably use it more for, you know, looking up at different things or things that I can steal as a coach. But, you know, like hopefully I can do a little bit better job of trying to get some things posted out there that maybe we're doing a decent job of. And like I said, maybe somebody younger or an enthusiast about basketball can hopefully pick something out of it and make their team better.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you listened carefully to this podcast today, you got better, and a lot of really, really good stuff here that we went over today. Derek, you know, I hope you enjoyed your first trip here on a pen and a napkin.
Certainly did. Like I said, we could talk forever, and, you know, like I said, I've seen you around at the Metro Basketball Coach Association and Clinic, you know, I not only just appreciate you having me on, but just the opportunities that we have to cross paths and talk basketball. You know, compliments to you on the different things that you've brought up, or just through conversation, the different things that, you know, I've been able to pick up from you and learn. And thank you for the opportunity of making me a better coach as well.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm just a Yahoo in his office with a computer and a microphone here. So, and 2% tech skill. That's what I got. So, but I appreciate it, Derek. It's greatly appreciated. Pen and a Napkin is all about helping coaches. And if I can help out folks a little bit, then it's well worth it. And that's the real pleasure of the side hustle here, so to speak. So, really great stuff here today with Derek Sonderlund, head girls basketball coach, Tri-Center Neola. Coach, if you could hold the line a second here, we just got to wrap up a few things. It was great having Derek on here today. We, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosec Chiropractic. Give them a call, 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter, like we said. Download, rate, and review the podcast here. Just, again, really, really good stuff here with Coach Sonderlund. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. It has been a privilege and a pleasure to have on Derek Sonderlund this afternoon. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.